Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good morning, David Slack.
Good morning, Johnny. How are you?
I'm good. Now, thank you for joining us all the way from Turkey. Goodness me, are you on a big old holiday or something like that?
I am. I'm on a very extended holiday. We went to, in April, we went to go and see Mary Margaret.
Oh, Mary Margaret Slack.
That name. Yep. And Karen went home when we'd finished that, but I wanted to stay on. And so I, what I wanted to do was ride the Eurovelo, a Eurovelo route in Europe. They've got about 17 of these things, bicycle lanes. Cycleways that run for about 2,000 or 3,000 k each of them, and you're unmolested by traffic. And I've been writing about these things for so long, I said, this time I'm going to ride on one. So I did. A mate and I rode from Nantes to Budapest, and now I'm on my way slowly home, and you have found me in Turkey.
Wow. I mean, this is political commentary, but how have you found the cycle life in Europe?
God, it's beautiful beyond compare. You know, when each day we would be riding into between half a dozen and maybe three or four dozen different towns, you know, depending on where the route lay. And you very quickly got a sense for each one of them, you know, how well do they allow for the transport mix? How well do they make room for people on foot and on bikes and on trams and all of those sorts of things? And every single time you saw one that really does it well, you thought, God, it feels good. It feels so bloody good. And I started by making a detour to Paris because I wanted to see what had happened there, because you may be aware that the mayor there about 5 years ago said, let's do something really bold here and really change the calculation so that you have these roads converted to cycleways all over Paris. And it's just a joy to ride there. It's just astonishing. I'm digressing a bit. The answer to your question is so many of these cities have done so much, and the more they do, the more it feels just so gentle and happy for everybody. You make more room in that way, and it's actually easier for the cars as well. And people will not buy that here. You know, I say here, meaning thinking I'm back in New Zealand, but that is the thing that confounds me and frustrates me so much, that this is, it's a win for everybody, and yet we've turned it into a full-on culture war.
It's so crazy. David, I over COVID, I started commuting to and from BFM on my bicycle, like every day, yeah. To and from. Yeah. And I must say that Northwestern Cycleway, I know people hear me advocate for it continually, but the Northwestern Cycleway is just so good. Yeah, it's amazing. If anyone is out there and they're just thinking, oh, what can I do in my life? How can I make a change? Just ride your bike to and from work if you have access to a cycleway. It is just so much easier. It's faster than me driving my car. Hopefully in the long-term plan, we see a few more cycleways appear in Tāmaki. But David, on to efficiency. We've got a newish government, and there is a big old push for efficiency in government departments. We're seeing cuts left, right, and centre. We're seeing the healthcare system. Last week, there was a story where the government is pushing for like $1.4 billion in savings in the healthcare sector. Where do we start with this one, David?
Well, you can sort of take it back to the 1980s, where, you know, it was this great revelation that we had that the only thing holding us back was this inefficiency in our post office, our forestry, our ferries, everybody, even our big companies and the farms. And so we threw ourselves into sorting that out. And, it was a thing that needed to happen, but it was also something that we learned as we went into it that actually has other consequences to it. It's one of those yes but situations. Yes, we need efficiency is desirable, but you have these other consequences. And they were, for example, massive unemployment, brain drain, reliance on foreign investment, and losing key industries, and so many unintended consequences, and so much socio-economic damage that's yet to be mended. And anybody who has come through that time and come to this point today without recognizing that is deluding themselves, and yet there's a good chunk of people, a good chunk of voters, who never really kind of accepted or registered that there was so much more to it than just we squeezing the greatest efficiency out of things. And so we have this problem now where the simplistic answer that this government is happily applying to so much of what's going on is, we just need to get in there and sort it out and get efficient. And we're seeing it especially in the healthcare system. And the thing about the healthcare system is that it's not like running a tire shop or a car dealership or something like that. There are so many moving parts to it. You only have to sit in a hospital for 10 minutes and look at what it takes to put all of that together and contemplate how the notion that you might achieve efficiencies in the way that is implied by the Prime Minister and by his health minister, in the simplistic way it is being kind of presented, is a delusion, because these things are hugely complex. It takes a certain amount of resource, it takes a certain amount of layers of people, and pretending that it's as simple as running the kind of businesses that, you know, a lot of people might see in their own work is doing us all a disservice, and yet that's what's going on here. And what that all means is that we have now the great jeopardy that the proper amount of backroom service to the health system that is necessary will not be available. And it's becoming very clear, or I should say not necessarily very clear, but clearer, that no matter what Shane Retty might say in particular, or Lester Levy, there is still a great shortage of frontline staff as well. And they didn't, despite what was being asserted in the last week or so, overfund it. But in the largest sense, it remains underfunded. And that's because, so I'm really ranting here, Johnny, but I'll round out this point. That's because no matter how much money you have for health, you can always need more. And there'll always be somebody there who on the margin who's missing out. And so you'll have this terrible story to tell. And so it can look as though the health system is always a mess. But the crucial thing to look at is, how does this compare with other countries? And our spending on health and our spending on public service and our spending on ratio of back office to front office is very comparable to other countries. We're not doing something stupid or wrong or dumb. If anything, we're just a little bit light. And the great hazard right now is that these people are probably going to do what they did last time, which is choke it off, run it down, and that means that we'll be lighter again than we were, despite whatever they might be asserting. They can't magic this into something better by claiming they're going to achieve efficiencies in the way they customarily have. And when you have something like this 14 layers of management thing being thrown around to try and justify all of this, you know that you're being sold a pup, because the first thing is a health system is complicated, so there will be layers. The second is, when they asked them to actually set out these 14 layers, it took about 2 days to get a reply and a response, and it turned out that these layers include the patient, the doctor, the nurse, and the chief executive. I mean, come on. Don't kid a kidder.
Why do you think the public has held on to this idea that efficiency is okay, and that we are, it feels like we are being fed a message of, the bloated administration staff is really holding us back and these cuts are justified. I mean, really, if we are going to look back to the 80s, there must be a bunch of economic and social consequences and lessons that we can go, hey, well, actually, if we take a closer look, this happened. I mean, what could people be mindful of what's going to happen this time around?
All right. Look, absolutely, we can look back and say there are clear lessons here.
Yes.
And what we need to be watching for is anybody trying to make it sound simpler than it is.
Yeah.
And that's what people are doing. If it sounds too good to be true, it bloody is. And that's what's being presented here. And so there is what you want to be seeing happen is not 3 billion in tax cuts for landlords, but enough health budget to be applied properly.
Yes.
And secondly, for the reforms that were already underway to be seen through rather than being
chucked
reorganized
off. Yeah.
As a kind of ideological fetish. And what all they're really looking at doing here is the classic thing that a manager like Christopher Luxon goes and does, and that is, if it's all decentralized, and I'm just talking about any old organization now, you bring it all back to head office. On the other hand, if it's all at head office, you say, right, we're decentralizing and empowering all of these people. And so it's all that's really going on here is it's just management shuffle that was unnecessary because a huge and complex and well-conceived system had been set in motion, and we now stand to waste a couple of three or four years, in fact, of valuable work.
Yes.
And valuable people who will, you know, disappear out of this. So it sounds too good to be true. It is.
All right. David Slack, is there anything that we can do as the general? Obviously, we can vote in a couple of years' time, but is there anything, are there any points of action that people probably need to start thinking about next time they vote? We're just faced with a situation where, hey, this tax cut is really actually, that extra $20 a week is probably maybe not worth it for the health of the overall system.
It's amazing how quickly that can vanish in your experience if it even looked any good at the outset. And they're doing their best right now to say, oh, you're about to get your magnificent tax cuts. It'll be barely
noticeable.
Yeah, and in the longer run, other things are going to be undone because of it, and so you're going to be worse off. It's again, sounds too good to be true. It is.
All right. Hey, David, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning.
Pleasure, John.
How long before you're back in the country?
About 3 or 4 weeks.
All right.
I don't really want to come back.
Just want to ride your bike around Europe. All right, mate. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning or this evening in Turkey. We'll look forward to catching up in a couple of weeks' time if it's on the cards.
Very good.
All right, no cheers, problem. Mate. Okay, bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.